I want to thank my mom for the Oscar.
And to evaluate the prospects for democracy, we have to, first of all, carry out some kind of assessment of where the world is heading. That's the prospects part. And crucially, we have to decide what we mean by democracy, which is a term that is used in a wide variety of ways. If we look at the present scene, we find an apparent clash between doctrines that are widely and, in fact, proudly proclaimed, and social and political realities that appear to conflict with them very sharply. The leading doctrine is that the wave of the future is democracy and markets, a future for which America is the gatekeeper and the model. I happen to be quoting from the New York Times, but if you sample almost at random, you'll hear the same thing, more or less the same words. Now, that's the doctrine. The reality is that the world, including our own society, is moving towards a more autocratic and absolutist structure. The scope of the public arena is narrowing, and the opportunities for popular participation in it are also declining. In short, the realities are that democracy is under attack. There are also parallel attacks on free markets, and there are expanding forms of market distortion. It's an interesting topic, but not tonight's topic, so I'll put it aside and keep to the question of democracy, the other half of the story. Well, I said that the doctrine and the realities are apparently in conflict. That is, the doctrine that the wave of the future is democracy.
Hello and welcome to The Pigeonhole. I'm your host, Lainey, and we have a very special evening planned for you tonight. My very special guest will be Michelle Schacht, the one and only. She'll be calling us around 10:30, and she has been up to so many things. We can't possibly cover them all, but there are a few very important happenings that we will be discussing with her, and just give you a little advanced information about that. And the first thing she has coming up is a re-release of a CD that she originally released in 1993 called Arkansas Traveler, and it's an old-timey sound with fiddles, guitars, banjos, and it's just so much to talk about with that, and I'll make you suffer through the wait until we talk about it some more a little later. But she's also doing something that's part of Concerts for Change. It's something called Girls Gone Carry. She's doing presenting a show at Feydeau Do downtown in Los Angeles at 5257 West Adams Street. Girls Gone Carry, Feydeau Do, September 17th. That's this Friday at 7 o'clock. And she'll be emceeing, and it's featuring L.A. rock bands Texas Terry Bomb, Vigenius, and Microdot. There will be film screenings, spoken word, dance performances, reps from John Kerry for president, and plus the activist groups Code Pink and Swing State Sisters. You can get a discounted ticket to that event online at concertsforchange.org. Or you can pay a little more at the door, but it's all worth it. And basically, it's a campaign to raise women's awareness of the presidential election and to encourage more women to vote. Because the vote, of course, in this year's presidential election is perhaps more important than it's ever been. Let's see. Oh yeah, and to launch the re-release of her CD Arkansas Traveler, Michelle Schacht is doing a jams tour, which is very innovative. It's the jams tour, which invites fans from the audience to come on stage and jam with Michelle Schacht and friends. And that's going to be around the country beginning September 22nd in Morgantown, West Virginia. And it's going to go through October 9th, ending in Yokohama, Japan. Did I say across the country? I meant around the world. And Michelle also has a political activist music zine of sorts called Jams, and the subheading is Not for Polite Company. And in it, she talks about her history, and Clarence Gatemouth Brown has some interesting things to say about the way things are. She talks about Bush and the rise of Christian fascism. It's a very interesting magazine, and it's also there to help raise awareness for a campaign that she and her church are involved in called Save Africa's Children. And there's also some funny stuff in here. This is actually a magazine you can buy. And we'll have to ask her where. So enough talking from me right now. You're going to get sick of my voice, as I'm sure I already am. Before we go to the Michelle Schacht stuff, let us play a reprise of a live call that we had a few weeks ago with the help of Aaron from Get the Fuck Up, the illustrious radio show that's on right before mine on Monday nights. This was a threatening phone call that we had, and we really enjoyed it. So because we've had such great feedback and people have requested hearing this again, I'm going to play it for you now. And you are listening to The Pigeonhole on killradio.org.
It appeared that about
Oops. And I'm just trying to set that up for you. And maybe we will go to some music first while I try and get that cassette set up. And let's actually go and play some thing off of Michelle Shock's re-release of Arkansas Traveler to whet your appetite for the interview to come. And we hope, we hear a rumor that Michelle may actually come back and join us next week for a live performance in the studio. That would be more than exciting. I'm going to play the song Strawberry Jam that she did at, off of Arkansas Traveler with Doc Watson.
Saturday morning found me itching to get on over to my grandma's kitchen.
What you gonna do, honey?
The sweetest little berries was cooking up right, and then we put them in a canning jar and seal them up tight. We were making jam.
What kind?
Strawberry jam, that's what kind.
Oh, the good kind.
Yeah, if you want the best jam, you got to make your own. Smucker's, Welch's, Knott's Berry Farm, but a little homemade jam never did a body no harm. A little local motion is all we really need to close down these corporate jam factories. We'll be making jam, strawberry jam. Mm-hmm. If you want the best jam, you got to make your own. Make that jam, Doc, show 'em how it's done. Everybody's making homemade jam. So won't you call your friends up on the telephone? You invite them on over, you make some jam of your own. You'll be making jam, strawberry jam. If you want the best jam, you got to make your own. Go on, Jerry, let the jelly roll. Make your own.
Okay, I have located the recording of the threatening caller tape, but I'm wondering if I should hold it till the end of the show. But oh, what the heck? We'll play it now.
I've been involved in broadcast engineering for some time.
That's good, and I'm glad about that. But the thing is that are you listening on your computer?
No, I've never heard this program before. In fact, I was unaware of your dial position.
Say that, our dino position, like dinosaurs?
No, dial.
Oh, our dial
position. The radio dial.
Oh, gotcha.
I have you coming through my radio.
Your radio, huh?
Yeah.
Well, we must be getting rebroadcast because we're an internet station, so.
Well, you're an internet station?
Yes, we are, killradio.org.
I'm listening to you on 104.7.
Okay.
FM.
Well, then we must be getting rebroadcast by another person.
Do you have any idea who this 104.7 has?
Wait, how'd you get the number if you're just listening on the radio? We actually haven't gotten it. We haven't given out the number.
Yes, you just gave it out.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, I gave up the number.
So, I don't know. Someone
we're
must be rebroadcasting us.
Well, don't you have any idea who this person might be? Because, again, you can't use the... You can't use profanity on the other. That's
we cannot use profanity on the other. I can use profanity whenever I want, actually.
Well, we're not on the air, though.
Just because you're broadcasting does not give you the entitlement to use profanity over the airwaves, or public airwaves.
Sir, what is your name again?
My name is Frank.
Frank.
I'm a broadcaster.
And we'll just play a small portion of that. That was fun. Okay, let's play some Michelle Schacht music from 1988 off of Short Sharp Schacht. This is called When I Grow Up. And if you're just tuning in, Michelle will be joining us live on the air in about 15 minutes' time.
Sit by a fire and watch the moon freeze.
Oops, that was from Short, Sharp, Shocked. And let's play something else off of Michelle's new Arkansas Traveler re-release. And by the way, she's just released it on her own Mighty Sound record label, and Michelle is actually the only known, what is it, the only known artist to, the only known recording artist to fully own and publish her complete masters. I'm sure she'll have some more to tell you about that. For now, let's play Secret to a Long Life off of Arkansas Traveler with the band and Michelle Schacht.
Sweet talking ladies, man, that's what he'd have ladies all to thank. Oh, the secret to a long life's knowing when it's time to go. Oh, the secret to a long life's knowing when it's time to go. So when the posse came riding, Billy went hiding down south. To a long life's knowing when it's time to go. Oh, the secret to a long life's knowing when it's Sybil sits in a rocking chair, chewing tobacco and spitting out cares. Sound of a fiddle floating through the air. From the Jones boy across the holler, from the Jones boy across the way.
Michelle? Yeah.
Hi, welcome to Kill Radio.
Thank you, Lainey.
And we're very excited to have you with us. And you have a lot to talk about right now.
Well, there's, of course, all the politics in the air, but truthfully, that comes and goes. It's the condition of the culture and the society and the state of mind that people are in. And I find music and songwriting addresses those topics probably a little better than a 2 cents worth on politics. But shoot, whatever you want to talk about.
Well, I want to talk about your upcoming events and you've got a re-release of Arkansas Traveler coming out tomorrow, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's see. What is today? Today's
the 13th.
Oh, yeah, it is tomorrow. Happy Arkansas Traveler Day, everybody.
Yes.
I'm reissuing, after a long wandering in the wilderness, out of print, I can call it my masterpiece.
Arkansas
Traveler.
You're breaking up a little.
All right.
Wait a minute.
And also, on Friday, be sure to let your listeners know I've got an event coming up. Girls Gone Carrie. Girls Gone Carrie. How about that?
I would really encourage our listeners to go. We're very close by, because that's going to be at Fado-Do downtown here in Los Angeles.
That's right. And if it's any motivation, we will be taking our tops off for John Kerry.
Really?
No. I wouldn't do it for the man.
I think that's what they're going to be doing at the Bush fundraiser.
I might do it for plastic beads, but I wouldn't do it for John Kerry.
that's smart, because you need to get some kind of currency in exchange. Yeah, it's going to be a big event. You've got you're emceeing.
Yeah, I'll be the host.
And you've got Texas Terry Bomb, The Genius, and Microdot performing,
among others. My friend Janet Robbins going to stop by. It's just going to be a bunch of wild women who don't get the blues over what the Bush administration is doing. We're going to get active and do something about it. We're going to make music and raise hell and get our 2 cents worth in while we still have the freedom of speech to do so.
Yeah, sounds good. I see Code Pink, the activist group, is going to be there. I've seen some of them at some protest marches I've been to, wearing their bright pink clothes.
They interrupted Code Pink. Jody Evans interrupted Bush's acceptance speech during the Republican National Convention. Did you see that?
No, I heard, though.
Yeah.
Good for her.
She took her dress off, but she was wearing a pink slip underneath, and the pink slip said, "Fire Bush, bring the troops home now." He got flustered.
That's good. Well, it doesn't take much to fluster him. Do you want to say anything more about this particular event? What about the this is to encourage more women to vote, right? That's the ultimate
goal. 22. I hope I have my figures right. There's 22 million women between the ages of 18 and 34 that did not exercise their right as a citizen to vote, and this organizers represents a huge demographic, a swing vote that could basically turn the election, turn the tide of the election. And when you look at all of the administration's policies that are not supportive or outright against women's freedom, and I don't just mean freedom of choice, but all the economic decisions. Everyone knows women make 50 cents on the dollar to a man. So when you put the kind of economic pressures that have been coming down in this economy to support his little Bush wars, who do you think is getting hardest hit, men or women? It's women, always, always. So a lot of women in that voting age range I just told you about, they're very apathetic. They don't understand how their vote relates to the bigger picture. They feel like their vote doesn't matter. And in fact, if they voted as a bloc, they could completely control this country.
Yeah, and you could just, there's so many issues that affect women that you could just pick one to aim at them, like reproductive rights, the right to choose, that the Bush campaign is pretty much against.
Well, like I say, that's the obvious one.
The ones that
I think women should be motivated by are the economic ones that come down hardest on women. You know, even these tax breaks that he's given to his rich friends, you know, it's affecting social services. And domestic violence, for example, is something that goes up as economic pressures come down on a family. So, you know, a tax break for the rich means, you know, a pot or a pan coming down on your head. Well, I'm exaggerating, but it's not that far removed from reality.
No, it's not. And this event is all part of these concerts for change. And
yeah, they have identified about, let's see, I guess it'd be about 20, a couple dozen swing states where, I mean, you can tell California. Really, I don't think Bush is even trying. I've seen so many bumper stickers just today. One said, defend the USA, defeat Bush. Another one said, be patriotic. vote, defeat Bush. You know, it's like everybody's defeat Bush. A lot of people are like anybody but Bush. And that's, I guess, kind of where I fall into the argument.
California is very Democratic, I think.
Yeah.
We voted for Nader in the last election.
Yeah, you know, but looking
hopefully
at these
not
swing
this one.
States, we're raising funds to go into states like, I think, well, I just did a benefit, I don't think it's related to this, but we raised funds for Pennsylvania and Oregon. Those are two of the swing states. I don't remember exactly. Vote for Change, though, is focusing on swing state voters, and particularly Girls Gone Carry is focusing on these young women in those swing states.
Okay.
So, well worth the effort, I think.
So everyone should go down to Fado Dough at 5257 West Adams Street in downtown Los Angeles this Friday, 7 o'clock, to Girls Gone Carry.
I will be emceeing the show, probably sitting in with a couple of the gals or maybe playing a few songs of my own, but most important is we'll all be there in camaraderie. There's been, because of this Iraq fiasco, a very strong uprising of women's voices. Because, you know, we talk about the young women who, not just reproductive rights, but the economic effects of the Bush administration. But then there's women, you know, I'm in the older demographic now. A lot of my friends have kids. And they're saying now we're going to be over there in this mess that's been created for the next 10 to 15 years. I mean, that's...
Like that. Michelle, I think we lost you. You still there?
Mm-hmm.
Hello, you're breaking up a bit. Are you lost in the Sierra Nevadas?
Yeah. I guess I better let you go. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Oh, well, good. I was saying, you know, women also, they say women ended the Vietnam War. Women marched on Washington and said, not my son, you're not taking. That put a kibosh on things. Women are powerful. They
Michelle, We're losing you again.
All right, well, I better let you go.
Now I can hear you.
Well...
I want to get to talking about your Jams tour and Arkansas Traveler, too, before you take off.
All right. I've got a series of concerts coming up on the East Coast. Do your listeners listen on the Internet to the East Coast? I guess they would.
Sure. We have listeners all over the country and all over the world.
Well, tell them to go to my website, michelleshock.com. What else? And the tour dates are listed. But more important than that, there is a set list on my website that tells all of the songs that I'm going to be playing on the tour. And then I've streamed the audio for that set list. And so if people play mandolins or guitars, banjos, fiddles, you know, if you play piano, whatever, go on the website and learn and practice along with your favorite songs and then come to the show, bring... If they're portable, bring those instruments. If they're not, we'll have them provided there. But sit in with us, and let's make some jam.
That's so fantastic, and it's so in keeping with the spirit of the old-timey music that you're trying to keep alive with the Arkansas Traveler recording.
Yeah, on Arkansas Traveler, it's all fiddle tunes that everybody knows, and they're standards, you know. You may not know it as Turkey in the Straw, you may know it as Bringing Home a Baby Bumblebee, but it's the same melody. And I grew up playing with my dad and my brother, going to bluegrass festivals, and then I put my own words to them, and then recorded them with some of my all-time favorite musicians and heroes. And now I'm reissuing it 12 years later, and just having a good old time. It's standards. Everybody knows these songs.
What was it
They're
like?
Simple, three chords.
What was it like playing with Doc Watson?
Oh my God, that was like that was like you interviewing me. I was nervous. I was so nervous. I had to tune my guitar in front of him, and somehow I decided that he must have supersonic powers of hearing.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He could hear microtonal pitches, and I freaked out. I couldn't tune my guitar in front of Doc Watson, and I had to go on stage with him in a few minutes, and I panicked. But fortunately, a wonderful musician named Bernie Ledden was on hand to kind of help me get my cool. And we went out there and played with not only Doc Watson, but, you know, great legends like Mark O'Connor and Bela Fleck and Jerry Douglas, Sam Bush. They were all there jamming with Doc, and they sat in with me. And, oh, my, I'm so, so honored to have that as part of this recording. I'm telling you, it's a masterpiece.
Well, we've been playing it here on Kill Radio.
All right.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I've actually been a fan of your music for, can I say, many years?
Yeah, because I've been around many years.
Yeah, well, when I lived in Boston in the 80s and early 90s, I went to see your shows there.
Very, very good.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of good times on the road. I've taken myself a little bit off the road. I'm not going out quite as much because I got a new love thing. I was, you know, married for a lot of years, and it kind of got me down. I was divorced a couple years ago, but now I got a new love thing, and I don't like to be away from him. So, it's kind of keeping me happy, but keeping me home a little bit more than I used to. So catch it while you can. I'll be out on the East Coast in September and on the West Coast in November. I'd love it if you could make it to one of those shows. But in any case, I think you're planning to come down on Friday night, aren't you?
I wouldn't miss it.
Wonderful.
Do you want to, there's another cause that you have. Do you want to talk about Save Africa's Children?
It's a cause that was initiated not by myself, but by, I attend an African-American church in South Central Los Angeles. It's called West Angeles, and it's one of the oldest African-American denominations called Church of God in Christ. It's a Pentecostal, Holy Roller, evangelical. I'm a born-again Christian, what can I say? But we started hearing from our pastor, our bishop, a couple of years ago about this, the consequences of the AIDS pandemic in Africa, that in the next 5 to 10 years, there's going to be 40 million children without a mother or a father no place to call home, no extended family to take care of or support them, orphans, in the deepest sense of the word. And so my pastor has wisely recognized that there's no one speaking for Africa, and the children of Africa particularly, save for the African-American congregations first, and I think he'll try to expand it out, sort of like the civil rights movement in the 60s started in the black churches and then with students, and then they formed a broad coalition with progressives and liberals, but it started with an initiative out of the black church. And I think that I went over there last September. We went to Ghana and Nigeria. Those countries, honestly, aren't the hardest hit. There's some places like Uganda, Angola. Oh, my, I don't know how they're going to make it. South Africa really is being hard hit. 40 million, Lainey, 40 million children. So I've done some fundraising efforts on behalf of that, but it's also is important just to make people aware. You know, here we are creating unnecessary crisis and wreaking havoc in the Middle East when there's so much that could be done on a humanitarian level in places like Africa.
Well, how can we get involved with a group like that? Or
you know what I'm about to say? Go to SaveAfricasChildren.org and check it out. You know, be aware of what you're getting into. It's one of these here faith-based initiatives that you've heard about. And I suppose not everybody's cup of tea, but it's what's rocking Michelle Shock's world these days. So if I could share it with anybody who, you know, is interested in keeping up with what's really gotten my attention, I just find the situation to be riveting. There is so much resonance. My pastor calls it the Joseph paradigm and talks about how, remember in the Old Testament, how Joseph was sold by his brothers into captivity.
Yeah.
And while in captivity, God blessed him to prosper. And he was able to, because he was so successful in Egypt, able to reach back and to help his brothers during their time of need. There was a famine that came across the land. And because Joseph was placed in a position of power and prosperity, he was able to reach back and help the same brothers that had sold him into captivity. And that's what I experienced when I went with my church to Ghana. It was powerful because we went to those slave castles there along the Gold Coast. And, you know, I was with a group of African-Americans. I was the only non-African-American in the group. And it was kind of hard because these slave castles, you recognize that they didn't get to the castles by the Europeans didn't go into the interior. It was Africans who would bring their own, you know, brothers and sisters to, you know, not literally speaking, but their fellow Africans to these slave castles, and there they'd be sold to the Europeans, and then, you know, transported across the ocean. So when I was with these African Americans and they were going through that slave castle, they felt the ghosts of their ancestors. And honestly, I didn't feel left out, even though, you know, I guess I'm European identified, I still felt like this was a Holocaust of epic proportions. 60 million Africans caught up in the slave trade, and only 20% of those survived the Middle Passage across the ocean. It was so horrific. And those slave castles, let me tell you something, they were nothing nice. No. Well, I hope I'm making sense.
Well, what is your group hope that they can do? What does a faith-based initiative hope that they can do to affect change?
They're launching orphanages, which is not typical. Africa is a tribal culture, therefore most of the extended family is what they use for support when, you know, like a parent dies. Usually the aunt or the uncle will take them in, and if they die, then the grandparents will take them in. Well, the AIDS pandemic is so severe that the extended families are no longer surviving, and they're predicting that half of the population of Africa is going to be under the age of 25. in the next 5 to 10 years.
Well,
there's just no old people surviving.
What do you think about the amount of money that the Bush administration has given to...
No, they promised.
Oh, they haven't given anything?
They promised it, but they never delivered it. And a lot of it had some very curious strings attached.
And it was a drop in the bucket anyway.
I know. I tell you, I love, you know who's really doing something, kicking it, is Bono. I think he's doing an amazing job of redirecting the debt relief and directing and focusing the world's attention on this situation. I'm knocked out by it. But it's got to take faith because, honestly, it's one of those hopeless situations.
Well, how do you, and I know you've got this magazine. Is this a one-time deal, or is this
No, I'm going to launch. I launched a new magazine, thank you for asking, called Jams, and I'm going to be issuing two issues a year. So one in the spring and one in the fall.
And
the first issue has features on artists that I worked with on Arkansas Traveler, but it also has a great lead feature by a Methodist minister out of Seattle, and it's about the rise of Christian fascism.
That's why I brought that up. I'm really curious to know, how do you explain the difference between, you know, when you call yourself a born-again Christian and then someone like George W., who calls himself a born-again Christian? There's
a
huge difference, isn't there?
I say it like this. If you are getting richer and more powerful, you're probably not living by the doctrines and gospels of Jesus Christ. That's my personal opinion about it. Now, understand, you know, there's a lot of evangelical Christians that preach prosperity and power to fight in this world, but I saw from the example of my God that he could have had the whole world, but in fact gave it up for the salvation of souls. And it's a real conundrum. People doing things in the name of God that, just make me horrified.
Yeah.
Horrified. And the thing that's most disconcerting is how it's not far removed from a type of nationalism that was rampant during the rise of Nazi power. That if God is on your side, then you can pretty much claim and get away with anything. And I put it this way. I saw that movie, Fahrenheit 9/11. You know that old country song where you go, I heard the wreck on the highway, but I didn't hear nobody pray. And the camera was on George W. when he got the news about the planes flying into the Twin Towers. And I did not see that man praying. No, sir.
Uh-huh.
I didn't see it.
No. There's something else I wanted to ask you about. The artist's rights lawsuit that you had
to
initiate?
It's kind of complicated. You want me to try to explain it?
Do you feel like it?
I'll try. I negotiated a very unique deal when I signed to a major label back in 1987, I guess. I turned down the advance. I said, keep the money. I want the ownership of my masters back. And that was very unusual. And the reason I was able to do that was because I didn't come to them looking for a deal. They came to me offering me a deal because this guy had released a bootleg record on me called the Texas Campfire Tapes. And it was such a phenomenal success that they said, we may have something here. This girl has promise. So they wanted me to sign a deal, and I said, I'll sign a deal with you, but only on these conditions. I want the ownership of the masters. So they agreed, and we signed the deal. And about 6 years into the deal, I was taken into the office of the vice president of business affairs, and he told me, we're never going to promote your records because you cut too good a deal for yourself.
What does that mean?
And what he was, yeah, those were his exact words. You cut too good a deal for yourself. And that told me pretty much everything I had suspected about major labels.
Yeah.
They don't mind, you know, cutting good deals as long as it's on their side.
Right.
But if the artist has an advantage, they will use their power to just basically put you on ice.
Mm-hmm.
So for almost 5 years, I couldn't record, but they wouldn't let me go. They told journalists that I was not on the label. But I couldn't, they sent out a cease and desist letter to other labels to keep me from talking to them and signing with them. They basically just tried to destroy me. And so I went on the road and I toured and I kept writing songs and I recorded an album, but I could only sell it at the shows. So I basically went underground for about 5 years, and then a very helpful attorney named Peter Paterno helped me initiate an artist rights lawsuit, which claimed that PolyGram had violated my 13th Amendment right. That's the amendment against slavery.
Hmm.
And PolyGram decided not to pursue it in court, and so the day before it went into court, they said, here, take your masters and go. And so most people assumed that I won the rights to my masters, but in fact, what I did was I defended the right. I already had it, but I found out that it's just like your freedom of speech. It's just like your freedom of assembly, like you saw at the Republican National Convention.
Mm-hmm.
Rights are like muscles. You have to exercise them,
yeah,
or you could lose them. And so defending my rights was what I was up to. I wasn't like a lot of my fellow artists trying to win the rights. I actually had the rights, and it was like David trying to go up against Goliath when I was defending myself, because they were just going to make me... you know, swept under the carpet, out of sight and out of mind.
But now you're you've become the only known recording artist to fully own and publish your complete masters.
I publish all my masters. I publish a magazine. I own all my publishing. I am a mini mogul. I'm telling you, Lainey, I am a mini mogul. You know, I'm not a big fish in a big pond. But I've got control of my destiny, and the creativity that comes from that, I can't tell you how satisfying it is.
Look at all these wonderful people that you've been able to work with.
Thanks.
And this Arkansas Traveler is fantastic, and
all
your stuff's
fantastic. Oh, it's one of my favorite albums. I'm so glad I've got it back out there.
You know, one of my favorite albums of yours is Short, Sharp, Shocked.
Yeah, that's the one most people are familiar with because it's got Anchorage and Memories
yeah.
East Texas, When I Grow Up.
Well, I was just doing a little background research before getting ready for this call, and I opened up my cassette tape of Short, Sharp, Shocked, and out of it fell this little article that I had clipped apparently in 1990, which must have referred to your song Graffiti Limbo. Now that was about a real person, right?
Yeah, Michael Stewart.
Okay, well, do you want me to read? Do you remember what happened to him? Or what happened?
Well,
to
I know that eventually they took the cops to court.
And they won.
And the family
sort of.
Won. You know, but that doesn't bring their son back.
No, I know, but I just was. It brought me back to remembering that what that song was about, and I mean, you've always, I don't know, it was an important song. You can listen to it now and enjoy the music, but then this article fell out of my cassette case and talked of a family of a graffiti artist who died after his arrest in a subway station and what critics said was police brutality.
He was lynched. Was lynched. 11 white cops. One unarmed young black man. You tell me what you call it.
And they were acquitted.
Yeah, because the coroner... testified to the grand jury that he had lost the evidence. So, you decide.
A family got $1.7
million. Woohoo!
But they lost their son.
Yeah, this was years before the Rodney King beating.
Yeah.
This was back when we thought we had solved all the problems of racism, you know? Racism does not exist in America any longer.
No.
And then something like that comes along,
Not,
and you're going, oh, there's some strange fruit. yep. hanging from northern trees.
As long as we can sit at the same lunch counter, we're okay.
Bus to the schools, you know.
So where can we get this Jams magazine?
You can go on michelleshock.com. You can come to my tours. And I'm hoping within a couple of issues it's going to be at all of your finer indie retail. And who knows, maybe even mainstream places like Borders or Barnes & Nobles. I'm a mini mogul and I'm moving on up.
Well, we hope that that you do, and that there's no limit to your success.
Well, you too, Lainey. You got your own radio show. How cool is that?
It's fun. It's fun because I get to talk to you know, incredible people like you.
And, thank you.
And help you promote you know, these great causes that you're working on. And
I appreciate the support. And one last time. I'm not going to say John Kerry is my favorite candidate. I was a Kucinich.
Right.
You know, I hated even being as mainstream as a Democrat. Yeah. But I figured I would be a hypocrite if I didn't try to do something working inside the system.
Mm-hmm.
And for my money, Dennis Kucinich had the right-on message. He stood up against this war, this Iraqi travesty, this invasion, this unforgivable excuse for American imperialism, and he really spoke the truth to power and got precious little media coverage for it. So we're stuck with John Kerry, but I'm making the best of a bad situation. And as we know, anybody's better than Bush.
Right. Do you think Kerry's going to be able to do anything to get us out of the mess in Iraq?
A lot of people are speculating that he's saying one thing now while he's trying not to look too radical, and that maybe his true colors will come out after the election. But my philosophy is a little bit more despairing than that. There's a good chance that neither Bush nor Kerry can do anything about it, because by now the corporate interests have taken over control of the Pentagon, and they're running this country extra governmentally. You know, the president can ameliorate certain things like tax cuts or a woman's right to choose, but when it comes to these big imperial agendas, it's really the corporations that have bought our government out from under us. That's kind of sad, but that's how I see it.
They're really making a huge profit in Iraq now too, so it'd be hard to pull them away from that.
Yeah. I just wish they'd figure it out. It's proven when they do the math that it's not war is good for business. Peace is good for business.
It just seems like it's such a Pandora's box that I don't know. I mean, can he do anything? Can he at least, you know, try and stop the floodgates of
Well, you know, they say, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. I'm really encouraged by this new movement that's brought women together, recognizing how much we have in common. As nurturers and caregivers in our relationship to the earth. I don't want to idealize women. I know that we can be bitches too, but I do find a lot of encouragement from, you know, being with my sisters out there on the picket lines and protests and demonstrations and just being wild. I love it. It's fun on top of everything else.
I'd like to see an event with Code Pink and Women in Black together.
Yeah, they've done some.
Have they? Yeah, my sister organizes some Women in Black events in Detroit, I believe. But I know there's different Women in Blacks.
They're all over the world. It's a killer combination of colors, pink and black. It looks good. It's a fashion statement.
Yeah. And one group is very vocal and one is very quiet.
Yeah, fair enough. But it takes all kinds. It takes all kinds. And the point is, we're taking a stand at a time when it takes a lot of courage and sacrifice to do that.
Sure does. Well, we're going to continue to play your music, and I'm going to continue to talk about these events and visit what you're up to and keep an eye on your website. And wherever else that takes us.
Well, Lainey, did we cover most of the ground that that you had on your mind? I feel like we pretty much talked about the big stuff coming up.
We did. We covered a lot. We could go deeper, but, you know, we're hoping that you're going to come visit us sometime.
Oh, I'd love it.
You would?
I'd love it, sure.
Really?
Yeah,
we'd be thrilled if you want to come and play live, if you want to come and talk more in depth about your...
Let's do that. I tell you what, I'm going in the studio next month. Well, no, October. And then I've got a new record coming out around March or April of next year. Sometime before that, I'll stop by and we'll chat.
That'd be fantastic. And also, I want you to know that I think our talk tonight, if it's okay with you, we can post it on our killradio.org website, and that way anybody can go and listen to it whenever they want to, if they have
all
access
right.
to a computer.
Well, it's just me and my 2 cents worth, you know. I hope I got my facts right. Take it with a grain of salt. But I appreciate the opportunity to just speak my piece.
Oh, well, we appreciate having you on. And just to reiterate, you've got Arkansas Traveler, the third part in your trilogy, your masterpiece, coming out tomorrow. And people here should go to Amoeba Music to buy it, or to one of the other independent music stores in L.A. Then you've got your Girls Gone Carrie show coming up Friday, 7 o'clock at Fado Dough. And then the Jams tour that's kicking off on September 22nd. And go to michelleshock.com for more information on everything.
Fantastic. Lainey, keep on keeping on. You're doing good work.
And then the magazine, and then Save the Children. And you can find out about everything on your website.
Yeah, it's all there.
And thank you very much for calling in. And don't get lost in the mountains.
I will go catch a trout tomorrow, and then I will release it back into the stream.
That's good. Catch and release. We should all live by that motto.
Catch and release. All right, baby. Nice talking
all
with
right.
you.
You too. Thanks,
bye.
Michelle. Goodbye.
Side of town.
thank you all for listening. We were just talking to Michelle Schacht. We're talking to Michelle Schacht live on killradio.org. My name is Lainey, and you're listening to The Pigeonhole. And we're playing songs off of Arkansas Traveler right now from Michelle Schacht's forthcoming re-release. It's on her own Mighty Sound Records and Ryko. And you can go out and pick up a copy tomorrow. Now let's listen to... let's listen to Prodigal Daughter with Alison Krauss and Michelle Schacht.
What's to be done with a prodigal son? Welcome him. Your friends, our boys come back home. When a girl goes home with the old tea sown, let's draw your shades and your shutters. She's bringing such shame to the family name, the return of the prodigal daughter. Singing, oh, Cotton Eye Joe. I went to see a doctor and I almost died. Lordy, how she cried. Me and my daddy were never too close. He was there when I needed him most. Look, here comes a prodigal son. Fetch him a tall drink.
Well, I was so great of Michelle Schock to call in, and I also really want to thank Karen Sundell of a big PR firm in Los Angeles for making that all possible. And once again, I want to remind everyone to go to everyone in Los Angeles to go to Fado Do this Friday for the show. For the Girls Gone Carrie, and to pick up Arkansas Traveler, which is a really great CD. And there's so much we didn't cover, but Michelle has said that she's going to stop in sometime in the near future for a live performance in the studio on the Pigeonhole, heard on killradio.org every Monday night from 10 to midnight. And I'm going to let you go in a minute with some best of the Pigeonhole. But first, here's something from Days Gone By. This is from 1988. And it's, what song is it? Well, I think it's self-explanatory. It's a good one, though.
Oh, front page.
Well, it's good
crazy.
To get away from all that Iraq stuff.
Yeah. All this stuff that, you know, like, no one wants to hear about that stuff, you know?
I got an email the other day, Laney, that this guy's like, I'm tired of the war. I don't care if you're pro-war or against the war. And I can see his point. It's just war, war, war.
He's tired of the war already?
There's a lot of people who don't care, and now they're
and
expressing
and
their
And it hasn't
point.
Even been, there's not even a
well,
war yet.
Yeah, so they say
That's
it hasn't started, of course, because... Of course,
it's a lot of
postulating. Explain that to the 500,000 troops that are there and already, like, in combat.
What's a troop, by the way? Is a
it
troop
is one
a person?
Person? It is one
that
person.
That is so weird. Because I always thought a troop meant, like, times 10.
It depends how you spell it. So T-R-O-U-P is a troop times 10.
No, that's like a comedy troupe.
No, I don't think you spell it differently.
T-R-U-P is, or T-R-O-U-P.
It's always T-R-O-O-P.
It's
T-R-O-O-P.
Oh, it is?
Are you thinking of core?
I don't know. I thought it was always spelled different.
So if you say 500,000 troops, you mean 500,000 people?
Yeah.
That's so queer. Why not just say 500,000 soldiers? Because I always thought 500,000 and that's just troops.
Maybe it's...
So you have to times... There's always like 30 guys in a troop, right?
I think it sounds less human to say troop.
Yeah.
Soldier is like...
Trooper would be like...
A human being.
What a guy. He's a trooper.
Yeah, he's a troop. Yeah, so that, yeah, but you can't have, like, if you have a good troop of people, say, 10 people, you don't call them a trooper. You don't say, good job, trooper.
No, but you say, good job, troop. A troop means a collective. I always thought it was a collective of people.
Yeah.
Whether they
but
be soldiers
trooper,
or what.
But a trooper is one person that did a good
like
job.
Like a state